Here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome back to Campbell X at your service. Maria, thanks for trying to embarrass me once again by making me listen to myself. Maria's great. She's the best. Thank you, Maria. We've got another hour here of At Your Service. Thanks for sticking around with us here this evening. And the first segment of the show is always the shortest, but I want to throw this out because we heard both of these topics discussed by Maria Kina in the news. And that is, number one, Wesley Bell. What do you think of Wesley Bell? I got to tell you, I was one of the loudest, most vociferous opponents to Kim Gardner. At every juncture, I was on TV talking about her. I was on radio talking about her. I was pointing out how she was skirting, not only skirting the law, that she was hired as a prosecutor, but whose she saw her job as to not prosecute crime. So just so you know, that would be like if I was hired to be here on At Your Service and I viewed my job as standing here and being silent. All right. Silence does not make for good radio. So and neither does a refusal to prosecute crime make for a good prosecutor. And so I was very vocal about her. And when it came to Cori Bush, I was very, very vocal about Cori Bush being an awful representative for the first district in St. Louis. And yet Wesley Bell prosecuted crime. I applauded him for doing that. I was frankly, I was a little bit nervous about it when he when he became the prosecuting attorney. He was a little nervous, gave him the benefit of the doubt. He did great. So while he and I would probably not agree on very many issues when it comes to that district, I just want someone who's going to not be insane. I mean, that's where the bar is. It's so low that I don't think Wesley Bell is insane in any way, even though I thought Cori Bush was, I'm not going to call her insane, but she was highly, highly questionable in terms of her competence to do that job. Wesley Bell will be a great representative, even though he and I disagree. I can say to him, God bless you. I hope you do well in your job. Represent the St. Louis area well. I'll disagree with you on the issues, but you and I can agree and discuss those issues and debate them vigorously. That's, to me, was what I want in a representative. I think he will do that. Bob is holding. I want to get to Bob before I go to the break. Hey, Bob, welcome to KMOX. Okay, sorry. It is not. It is Jerry. I'm very sorry, Jerry. I looked at the wrong name. Jerry, you're up first.
Yeah, how you doing? Enjoy your show there. I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
How much of the defund the police was actually on the minds of voters as far as crime? Because, you know, everybody's, this Democratic mayor's saying that crime is down, but Governor Keogh wants to take over the St. Louis police force. So how much of this crime, defund the police and all this other rhetoric coming from the left actually affected the vote of, you know, Americans? Another thing is, do you think... in general, the progressives have now been probably pushed back another, maybe say in 2 years from now, this radical left, do you think are they going to be diminished or they'll be coming out more angry in the next 2 years?
Don't hang up, Jerry, because I want to follow up your question here, because let's have a conversation about this in the few minutes that we have. Your first point was about taking over the St. Louis Police Department. I can tell you that Mayor Tishara Jones, when she ran for mayor, she ran on a platform of defunding the police. She literally used that phrase, defund the police. When she got elected, she didn't necessarily remove any police money from the budget, but here's what she did. When there were open positions within the St. Louis Police Department, she stated that the city would not fill them. So by retirement, she reduced the level of police coverage for the city of St. Louis without actively cutting the police department's budget. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So from your perspective, though, is that a good thing or a bad thing? In other words, do you think that reducing police in St. Louis is a good thing? And I want you to answer this one next, Jerry. Do you think that because the city's not been doing a great job dealing with crime, should this go to Jeff City to be handled?
Yeah, I mean, if there's no concern from politicians locally to address the crime situation, then yes, yeah, something needs to be done. I mean, you know, you're getting fewer and fewer people coming downtown there every year, and no one's really. I don't hear anybody saying I got to go to downtown St. Louis. You know, I mean, it's just not the same like it used to be. But if the politicians don't want to do anything about the crime, then yeah, then let the governor do it. Then I mean, they just want to, you know, just put a smile on their face and make it look like everything's, you know, everything's great. But another thing is with the defund police thing now, do you think that the rhetoric's going to come down a little bit, or it's just still going to be on the surface if something like another, you know, George Floyd or something situation comes up? Do you think that will also be another attack by the, you know, by the left group?
Well, I think this ties in, Jerry, with the point that your second question that you had, and that is how is the woke movement dead? In essence, I think was your question. And I think those two topics are intertwined. I think what we saw with Kamala Harris was that there was a rejection not only of her, but also of Biden, because Biden, let's face it, Biden was elected because he ran and presented himself in the past as a moderate Democrat. And Americans embraced that moderate Democrat. But what we got was, as soon as he got to the office, he moved to the far left. And he started implementing progressive policies. And Kamala Harris was seen as an extension of those progressive policies. And those were repudiated soundly by the American people. So to answer your question, I think if we get another situation where there's police doing something criminally wrong in the city of St. Louis or in Missouri, will there be an attempt to defund the police again? Sure, because progressives haven't gone anywhere. But the question really should be, will that attempt to defund the police be successful? My opinion on that is no, it will not.
Right. And one more thing real quick, will the Democrats actually admit that the far left is damaging their party more so than actually helping? All right. Thanks a lot. And good show.
Great. Thank you, Jerry. Will the far left admit that? You know, I don't think they will. If you look at the mainstream media analysis of the election, most of the analysis, I've been watching CNN, I've been watching NBC, and I've been watching ABC. And in all of those three, I haven't watched any CBS, so I don't know what they're doing there. But then again, I don't know that anybody's watching CBS. That joke aside, in the analysis that I've seen, it all seems to center around this idea that America is a racist nation, that we're a racist nation and we're a misogynist nation. And so that Kamala Harris wasn't elected because she was a minority, both racially and a minority from a gender perspective. That seems to be the focus of the left. And the focus of the mainstream media, which, of course, I'm being redundant. So when you look at it from that perspective, they're not understanding the reason why she was rejected. That had nothing whatsoever to do with it. One of the people that I've championed as the new prosecuting attorney in the circuit attorney for St. Louis is Gabe Gore. And I think he's doing a fabulous job. I think he's doing an amazing job. And he's African-American. I don't care what his color is. I care about what his character is. I care about what his values are. That's what I care about. And so if I had a president, a person running, say Tim Scott running for president, would I vote for Tim Scott? In a heartbeat. It's irrelevant to me, and I think irrelevant to most Americans, whether a person is white or black or something else. We care about their values, and we care about their character. And that's, to me, what I know that's what I would be voting for when it comes to that office. Hey, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got your calls and your texts. I'm getting carpal tunnel here tonight, folks, typing responses to all the texts. But keep them coming. I'll just file a work comp claim against Camel X. Don't worry about it. 314-436-7900 at your service. We'll be right back. Phone lines are open tonight, and you are being a part of this show. Thank you. In fact, I had one person texting me here this evening among the myriads of texts that I've received, talking about the interaction on the show. That's what this show is about. I've designed this show to be interactive, and that makes you literally a part of the show, and we thank you for doing that. Joe is up first. Hey, Joe, welcome to KMOX.
Hey, thank you. Hey, several points that you made, I totally agree with. I mean, I'm a centrist Joe Manchin Democrat, very struggling with the Democratic Party right now. And agree with some of your assessments on the way that campaign was run. And but there was a couple of things I just wanted to kind of challenge.
Sure. Feel free. Love it.
Well, you met. I just moved back from Chicago after 17 mm-hmm. years in St. Louis.
Oh, well, listen, we need to start right there, Joe. You made such a great decision moving back here from Chicago. God bless you, my friend. That was the best decision you've ever made in your life. But go right ahead.
Well, I will say this. There's a lot of misconceptions about Chicago. If you don't live there,
you're outside of there, and the news you hear about it, it's
not, you're right.
I'm just teasing you because it's the home of the Cubs. That's the only reason. The only reason, my friend. Go right ahead.
I'm a loyal Cardinal fan. Was at every game. But I had it's a different kind of a city, different demographic city. I met a lot of different people there. Played soccer with a lot of Latinos, and you mentioned that, hey, there's excuses running around. Hey, bad campaign, didn't focus on the right issues, came from I was very disappointed being a Biden fan in the beginning. He did not deliver on what he promised.
Mm-hmm.
But interesting enough, watching the independents swing out towards Trump, even some moderates swing out towards Trump. But this big swing demographically with Latino men towards Trump, I think you ignore the cultural aspect, which is a big broad stroke I'm going to say here, but the cultural aspect that Latino men do not have a great appreciation for the African-American community. There's a lot of tension there already in those communities between the African-American and Latino communities.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, there is a, you said there is not a misogynistic aspect to it. There absolutely is. It's a different culture. And unless you understand that culture, they're not, they don't have a great appreciation for women in the aspect of leading. So to say that, hey, there was none of that there, I'm not sure I agree with that.
Well, here, let me, and this is why I love conversations, Joe. I don't like to have yelling and screaming. I love to have intelligent conversations, and you've already more than proven that you're capable of that. So let me give you my reasoned response. When I was comparing the Latino vote that Hillary Clinton received in 2016, she received, and I'm going by memory because I don't have it in front of me, but my recollection is that Hillary Clinton got somewhere between 75% and 80% of the Latino vote in 2016. So Latinos didn't have a problem voting for a woman in 2016, but this time they did. And I think what the difference isn't necessarily because Kamala Harris identifies as black, but I think more importantly, it's that the Trump campaign focused on broadening the base of their campaign. They were actually reaching out to Hispanics, reaching out to African Americans, reaching out to young people. They were making a point to broaden the base of voters instead of just counting on the same old voters to get out and vote. I think that's what made the difference more so than her gender or her color, because Obama, he had an enormous selection or section of the Latino vote. So I think that negates the race issue. Hillary Clinton negates the gender, but it really speaks to Trump broadening the base. What do you think of that?
Well, he absolutely did that.
Yes, I think he did. And Joe, I'm sorry to I'm sorry to cut you off, but we got a bunch of other callers, and I'm going to have to let you go because we're going to come up on a break here in a few minutes. I'm sorry to do that, but thank you so much for calling in.
I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Mike has been holding for a long time. Hey, Mike, welcome to KMOX.
Hey, Brad, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Yeah, my faith has been restored in the American people. I thought common sense had gone away. But like Mark Twain said, common sense ain't so common. Can you see Kamala Harris dealing with Putin, Iran, the Houthis, Hamas, the economy? The border would have been left the same.
Yep.
Fuel prices would have been the same.
No, fuel prices would have been worse because even though she talked a good game about being open for oil and open for fracking, let's just all get to what we all know. In her heart of hearts, she's anti-oil, she's anti-fracking, and she wants us all to drive electric vehicles and get rid of the internal combustion engine. We know she believes that. So the result of which would be to greatly increase the price of fuel by blocking oil companies from drilling for oil.
Not only that, what is that going to do to Detroit when she doesn't want combustion engines anymore?
Yeah, they're you're all, right. We've seen that, Joe, because right now, we've seen that as car companies have tried to embrace electric vehicles, their profit margins are going down, and they've got inventory of vehicles that they can't sell, and now they're having to retool because they were going all in for electric vehicles, but Americans didn't want them. So they're not buying them.
They're too expensive.
They are. They are way too expensive. Hey, I'm going to have to let you go, though, Joe, because we're coming up, or rather, Mike, I'm coming up on a hard break here. I'm going to have to let you go. We've got some folks holding online. If you would continue to hold, we'll catch you right after this break. KMOX, at your service. Don't go away. Fastest 2 hours in radio at your service here on KMOX Wednesday nights 8 to 10. Thank you for sticking around with us here on KMOX. Jim has been extremely patient. Hey, Jim, how you doing, sir?
Hi, Brad. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Am I on here now?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thanks. So, I've been listening. So I don't want to sound like I'm going, not talking about what you want to talk about, because I have been listening, but I think that maybe we're kind of underestimating the gravity of the situation here. I mean, I think if you've listened to what Steve Bannon says, you know, we have a fight on our hands. We won the election, but if you think about what these people have done in the past 3 or 4 years, it's a crime. And when she's talking about, I'm not abandoning the fight, they're trying to turn the whole Americas into one big nation, all the way from the tip of Brazil up to Alaska. I don't know whether it's going to include Hawaii or Greenland, but that's the plan. There's not going to be any constitution. You're not going to have a right to speak your mind. You're not going to have guns. It's going to be a socialist, Marxist utopia. And so we're fighting against it. It's not just an election. And I think that's why Donald Trump, where he gets his stimulus to keep campaigning the way that he did at 80 years old, because he knows what's on the line. It's everything. It's our whole nation. It's not just the Washington government or, you know, it's everything. We're playing for everything.
Well, Jim, to some extent, I thought it was ironic that Joe Scarborough over at MSNBC, his analysis this morning of the election results was that the Democrats have to confront the reality that the Democrat Party is too woke and doesn't understand the border. And that's the reason, that's one of the many reasons why they can't relate to regular American voters. So and to get back to at least one of your points, that I think is borne out by the fact that Trump exponentially expanded his vote count from Latino voters. Now, these are voters that the left tried to portray as being sympathetic towards an open border position. But the Latinos who are in this country, who are here legitimately, who are here legally, God bless them. I'm glad they're here legally. And yet those people understand that the importance of being an actual American citizen, and they came out for Trump in droves compared to years past. Don't you believe that to some extent that shows that, to carry on somewhat of the metaphor, that America is waking up to the detriments of being woke?
Well, yeah. I mean, we still have a chance, but people have to start being aware of it. It's a lot more than just sports gambling. Which, by the way, if you want to pass laws, it's fine. But, I mean, having a constitutional amendment for sports gambling,
absurd.
Are we going to have one next for fishing or
Yeah, it's absurd. But you know what, Jim? I personally have had, I deal with a lot of different legislators during the course of my career as an attorney. And I've been talking up this issue for almost 10 years in Jefferson City that we should change the Missouri Constitution in a way that you have to have 66.0% of the vote in order to amend the Constitution, not a simple majority. Had they done that 10 years ago, we wouldn't have even had to deal with Amendment 3. It may have been on the ballot, but it wouldn't have passed because it only got about 53 or 54% of the vote. It would have failed. But the legislators of Jeff City are too small-minded to deal with some of these bigger issues, and they just—I blame them.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, thanks for taking my call. Jim, get your next caller. Thank you.
Appreciate it, sir. Thanks for calling in. Hey, before we take any more calls, and yes, I've gotten a whole lot of texts. Thank you so much for texting in. I've been trying to respond to most of the texts that I've gotten during the breaks. So if you're still waiting on a response, I'll get something to you here during the next break. But one of the things I thought was very interesting about this election that we've just finished is that Democrats spent, hear me now, this is from Forbes magazine, so I don't have any reason to disbelieve it, that Democrats spent $2.1 billion in their losing effort against Donald Trump, $2.1 billion. Now, we don't know what Trump spent, but I promise you it was a fraction of that, a fraction of $2.1 billion. He's done that in all three of his campaigns. He doesn't spend the same kind of money that other politicians spend. But in breaking it down, they raised money. It was Harris for president spent about $900 million. A PAC called Future Forward, $600 million. The Democrat National Convention, $368 million. Harris Victory Fund, $321 million. When you add that up, it's $2.1 billion, probably more. But think about the opportunity cost. Think about this opportunity cost for just a moment. Whenever earlier in the show, when I was on with Matt Pauley during the end of his show, I talked about the opportunity cost of the sports betting amendment, Amendment 2. What do I mean by opportunity cost? Opportunity cost is an economic term that's used to describe if you don't use the money for this, you can use it for that. Okay? So when it comes to sports betting, as a more of a libertarian, I don't have necessarily a disagreement with people who want to bet. I wouldn't do it. It's voluntary taxation. I don't want to voluntarily pay any taxes. So why would I voluntarily pay more taxes by losing at sports betting? But again, that's an opinion. But if you want to, okay, that's fine. That's what libertarianism really looks at. But when we're told that it's for the kids, that when you pass Amendment 2, it's for the children. It's for the children. It's to help out schools. That's just a lie. It's not. Because even though the constitutional amendment guarantees that all the tax revenue goes to schools, it does not say anything about the ability of Jefferson City to then reduce the funding by the exact same amount, shift it to somewhere else, make government bigger. At the end of the day, schools are no better off. That's absolutely going to happen. That's what happened with casinos. That's what's going to happen right here with sports betting. I promise you with 100% certainty. But then there's the opportunity cost, and that is the money that I lose betting on the Chiefs, betting on the Philadelphia 76ers, betting on the Dodgers or the Mets, whatever team I'm betting on, the money I lose is money that I could have spent going out to dinner, going to Del Pietro's, going to Balaban's, going to any local restaurant, spending money there. Those people spend the money here locally, and it generates more money and more money, more revenue. But when I'm buying and losing on a sports bet, that money's going to Vegas. That money's going to wherever DraftKings is located. And it's not necessarily circulating right here in the St. Louis area. So that opportunity cost is that it does cost Missouri people because that money isn't being spent here locally. Now, let's apply that opportunity cost to what was spent on an election. I think the way we do elections in this country is atrocious. For people in the House of Representatives who get elected every 2 years, you're essentially running for office year-round. All the time. That's all you do. You fundraise, run for office, make a couple of votes, and go back to fundraising. And when it comes to just the Democrats, we don't know what the Republicans spent, but the Democrats spent $2.1 billion. That's just in the presidential race. Think about all those ads that you saw, all the ads that you've heard, all the billboards that you've seen. I spent a week in Arizona in October, and the amount of advertising that they dealt with is exponentially more than we had to deal with here in Missouri or in Illinois, because these were already states that were not in play. Think about the opportunity cost of what that money could be used for. Anything. Whether you say it's helping the poor, whether you say investing in our kids, whether you buy real estate, buy stocks, expand buildings, it doesn't matter. The opportunity cost of billions of dollars that are spent on politics could certainly be used for something better than calling Trump Hitler in the media. And so to me, I wish there were a way that we could have elections more like what they do in Europe. Now, listen, I do not like Europe in any way other than to visit. OK, I'm not a fan of Europe. They're all tea drinking, wine drinking, cheese and baguette eating socialists who are sitting around waiting for the U.S. to solve their problems. OK, so I'm not a fan of Europe. But when there's an election called in England, their entire election lasts 2 or 3 months. And for us, it's year round. All the time, already raising money right now for 2026 and 2028, already doing that. So I just look at the opportunity cost and say, how could this money be better spent? What say you? Do you have a problem with that? Do you have a problem with the money that's spent? Or from your perspective, is that just the cost of doing business? Listen, if we're going to take back government from people who don't share our values, this is just the cost of doing business. This is what it costs to be able to assert our values, whoever R is. It could be a D or an R, whoever that might be. This is what it costs to make things happen. What are your thoughts? 314-436-7900. We've got one more segment coming up next before we end the evening at 10 o'clock right here on Camel X. Here into the last segment of At Your Service. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, before I forget, I want to plug the show this Friday. You know the show, Chris and Amy. It's on here on Camo X from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. every day, Monday through Friday. Well, it's interesting. Both Chris and Amy have requested off on Friday. Now, sometimes I fill in for Chris when he's in Chicago visiting his second family. No, that's a rumor. Don't believe that. I just made that up. But whenever he's off, I fill in for him and sit in with Amy. Or when Amy's off, a lot of times I'll fill in for her and sit in with Chris. But now they're both off on the same day. So here's my question. Should feel free to text in. If I'm sitting in for Chris and Amy, does that mean I should get paid double for filling in for two people? Just a question. You know, it doesn't hurt to ask. We can ask those kinds of questions. But I will be fulfilling both of their hosting duties this Friday from 10 to 1. So if you like the kind of show that you hear right here on At Your Service, stick around on Friday morning, 10 to 1, and I'll be filling in for Chris and Amy on the show. A couple of things. Tonight, I've talked a lot about some of the benefits, I believe, of a Trump administration. What I do see, though, several detriments. And in the interest of being fully open about it, and these are the things that I've thought about that, from my perspective as a Ronald Reagan conservative, that I have some troubles with. And that is mainly dealing with foreign policy. Because if you look at right now, we have a threat in China. And to me, I don't think it's a question of if. I think it's a question of when we get into some sort of a military engagement with China. And that would be different from any engagement that we have ever faced since World War II. Actually, before then. Because at least in World War II, though our enemies, Japan and Germany, were also having to deal with fighting other countries. And so when we deal with China, we're hopefully going to have allies. And that's the problem, I think, of the Donald Trump mentality when it comes to foreign policy, is that he wants to go it alone. He's not for NATO. And NATO, from any point of analysis, has been the greatest keeper of peace since World War II on the planet, is the existence of NATO. Because under the NATO Article 5, if any country is attacked, if any NATO country is attacked, all NATO countries are attacked. And that type of overwhelming response to any conflict is such that it's kept the peace more or less since the end of World War II. And Trump is not for NATO. I am. I think the money that we spend is well spent. Now, do other countries not carry their fair share? Absolutely. And when Trump calls out these other countries for not funding their fair share for NATO, I applaud him. But at the end of the day, if you read between the lines, I think he just wants to be out of NATO. And if that's the case, completely disagree. Secondly, Ukraine. And I'm going to get pushback. And I've gotten a lot of pushback when I've said this position here on KMOX. I support Ukraine 100%. Why? Because fighting Russia in Ukraine is better than fighting Russia in Alaska. Fighting Russia in Ukraine is better than fighting Russia in Virginia. And so by supporting Ukraine, you're supporting democracy in an area of the world that desperately needs democracies, and you're degrading Russia's ability to carry on warfare and threaten Europe in the future. Listen, the idea of economic prosperity requires peace. It requires a peaceful scenario on the global stage. That's one of the reasons why the United States has prospered so much economically since the 1950s, is because of the relative peace and prosperity. If we're engaged in a war, we can't develop new products. We can't open new factories that are churning out anything other than military hardware. So those are some of the problems that I have. So right now, if Trump would cut off aid to Ukraine, Russia would take over. Russia would benefit from their illegal actions of an incursion into a democracy, and it would set them up to attack Poland, Moldova, and other countries in Central Europe. So why on earth is that ever in our best interest to allow Europe to fall into warfare again when by supporting Ukraine, we can encourage peace in Europe? To me, it's not difficult. It's a not too difficult of an equation. And also then we have Taiwan. And I don't believe that Donald Trump would want to come to the assistance of Taiwan when they are attacked by China. And again, I think it's a matter of when, not if. So if he's not going to support Taiwan, once again, we are asserting to allies, you can rely on the United States, and then later saying, JK, just kidding. We're not going to help you after all. Sorry, sucks to be you. And that's not how we treat our allies. China doesn't have allies other than maybe Pakistan and North Korea. Okay, those aren't really allies. Those are not allies. Those are countries that are bringing China down. But the United States has allies. And let me give you a really quick example here in the closing moments of the show. Henry Kissinger had a great book. It's an enormous book. I've read some of his books, not all of them, but the one is called On China. I would highly encourage you to read it. It talks about the history of China and talks about the philosophy of opening up China to the world in the 1970s when Henry Kissinger was in the Nixon administration. And he gave this as an example in the book that to me was an epiphany. He said that the United States views conflict like a football game. There's a line. One side is the offense, one side is the defense, and that's how warfare is conducted. But China doesn't see warfare like football. China sees warfare I think it's Mahjong, where it's a circle, right? Where it's a circle, where the game field is not a solid line, but it's round. And by having allies around China, like we do, that's the greatest keeper of the peace. So we have Japan, and we have now the Philippines. We even have Vietnam. We have Guam. We have India. We have all Australia. We have all these countries now that are encircling China that are allies. If we jeopardize those international relationships, then it becomes us versus China alone. And on that, I don't think that we can win if we're fighting in their backyard and we have to get halfway across the globe to fight the battle. However, if we have allies to help us, we're stronger together. I don't think Trump understands that. And I think that's why he would abandon Ukraine and he would abandon Taiwan. So on those points, as much as I think that Trump is going to help the United States economically, I'm very concerned about how we will proceed from a national security standpoint during the next 4 years of the Trump administration. Hey, coming up at 10 o'clock tonight, we've got the best of Dave Glover. You're going to want to stick around for that. Also, as I mentioned, I'll be filling in for both Chris and Amy on the show this Friday from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Hope you can check us out then. I don't know if the phone lines will be open, but text lines will. Talk to you then.